host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
Elon and I had a great relationship. I don't know if we're well anymore, but I'm very disappointed in Elon. I've helped Elon a lot.
Is the Donald Trump-Elon Musk bromance over? President Trump's threatening to cut off billions of dollars in federal contracts with Musk after the two billionaires engaged in a dramatic online feud just days after Musk called Trump's budget bill a disgusting abomination. Musk appeared to back the impeachment of Trump and claimed the president is named in the Jeffrey Epstein files. We'll get the latest. Plus, we look at the deadly impact of the House budget bill.
Our analyses demonstrate that the health care retractions proposed in the current reconciliation bill would precipitate more than 51,000 unnecessary deaths annually.
We'll also speak to Newark Mayor Ross Baraka. He's filed a federal lawsuit after being arrested by masked federal agents outside an Immigration and Customs Enforcement jail in Newark. Then to a doctor suing the University of California, San Francisco. She was fired after speaking out about Gaza. Plus, we get an update from the Freedom Flotilla boat heading to Gaza.
We are now on a sixth day of our journey to break the siege of Gaza and to create the People's Humanitarian Corridor with the Freedom Flotilla Coalition. And this journey represents not only an attempt to end starvation of the Palestinian people, but also a solidarity mission to break the siege.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. President Trump is threatening to cut off billions of dollars in federal contracts with Elon Musk after the two engaged in an escalating online feud just days after Musk left his role as a White House advisor. Tension had been escalating since Musk, the world's richest man, called Trump's budget bill a disgusting abomination because it'll increase the federal deficit by $2.5 trillion. On Thursday, Musk threatened to decommission the Dragon spacecraft used by NASA, which would imperil astronauts aboard the International Space Station. Musk also appeared to back the impeachment of Trump and took credit for Trump winning the presidency. In one online post, he referenced Trump's friendship with the deceased convicted sex trafficker Jeffrey Epstein, writing, quote, "Time to drop the really big bomb. Real Donald Trump is in the Epstein files. That's the real reason they have not been made public. Have a nice day, DJT!" exclamation point, Musk wrote. Trump accused Musk of going crazy after an electric vehicle tax credit was removed from the House budget bill. In one post, Trump wrote, quote, "The easiest way to save money in our budget, billions and billions of dollars, is to terminate Elon's governmental subsidies and contracts. I was always surprised that Biden didn't do it," Trump wrote. On Thursday, shares of Tesla fell 14% before rebounding. We'll have more on this story after headlines. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has acknowledged his government has been arming a criminal gang in Gaza that's repeatedly been accused of looting humanitarian aid trucks. This comes as the new shadowy U.S.-Israeli-backed aid operation known as the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation has suspended aid deliveries again, despite starvation spreading in Gaza. Some aid was briefly distributed Thursday. Palestinians describe risking their lives to receive a small portion of food aid.
We died inside. We died. We died. We can't. All this to get food for our children. I got this, a bit of flour, a bit of lentils, and two packs of pasta. We died. They made us pass at the peak of the heat and they killed us. We can't walk. We can't go on.
The UN is warning acute malnutrition among Gaza's young children has soared in recent months, with more than 2,700 Palestinians under the age of five diagnosed. Meanwhile, the World Health Organization has called for a halt to what it calls the relentless and systematic decimation of hospitals in Gaza, unquote. Meanwhile, a fourth journalist has died following Israel's attack on the Al-Ahli Baptist Hospital. Ahmed Khalja, who worked with Al-Arabiya, is the 226 journalists killed in Gaza since 2023. Lebanon's accusing Israel of violating the ceasefire by bombing Beirut's southern suburbs on Thursday night. The attack came on the eve of Eid al-Adha holiday. It marked the fourth time Israel's attacked the Lebanese capital since the November ceasefire began. In southern France, dock workers at a port outside Marseille have refused to move military cargo bound for Israel to protest the Netanyahu government's assault on Gaza. The Secretary General of France's Trade Union Federation told reporters, quote, it is unacceptable that union dock workers should be the ones forced to uphold the fundamental principles of international law and French values. The government must immediately block all arms deliveries to the state of Israel, unquote. On Capitol Hill, nearly two dozen Congress members have co-sponsored a bill that would withhold offensive weapons from Israel. The Block the Bombs Act seeks to cut off the flow of arms that violate international law and humanitarian norms. This is Washington State Democrat Pramila Jayapal, leader of the Congressional Progressive Caucus.
How many more children will we watch burned in flames? How much more carnage do we have to witness as the Netanyahu government uses U.S. taxpayer-funded weapons to kill Palestinians with impunity and to run roughshod over the Geneva Conventions and our own U.S. laws? How many more American-made bombs must we watch hitting hospitals, schools, shelters, indiscriminately killing aid workers, civilians, women, babies? How many more entire communities do we have to watch razed to the ground? This has to end. It is an affront to human dignity, to our collective conscience.
Congressmember Pramila Jayapal is one of the leaders of the Congressional Progressive Caucus. Secretary of State Marco Rubio has imposed sanctions on four judges at the International Criminal Court. It's the latest move by the U.S. to retaliate against the Hague-based court after it issued arrest warrants for Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and former Defense Minister Yoav Gallant for crimes against humanity and war crimes in Gaza. Meanwhile, Drop Site News reports a leaked State Department memo reveals the Trump administration's considering a radical restructuring of the agency that would see the consolidation or elimination of over 3,400 U.S.-based staff positions, as well as entire bureaus dedicated to conflict resolution, women's rights, public diplomacy, and humanitarian coordination. President Trump's withdrawn his nomination of Jared Isaacman to lead NASA. Isaacman's a billionaire private astronaut, close associate of Elon Musk, who's twice flown aboard SpaceX's Dragon spacecraft. His nomination had been approved by the Senate Commerce Committee, and the full Senate was set to vote on it in the coming days. This comes as the White House has proposed cutting NASA's budget by a quarter, with science programs cut nearly in half, which would lead to the cancellation of dozens of missions and thousands of layoffs. Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem has signed waivers to speed construction of 36 miles of new border wall in Arizona and New Mexico. In a statement, the department said Noem was exercising her authority to waive environmental laws, including the National Environmental Policy Act. Meanwhile, a Peruvian woman who was detained by U.S. Army soldiers and arrested by a Border Patrol agent in West Texas May 12th has been acquitted of illegally entering a national defense area. Adelie Vanessa de la Cruz Alvarez already faces deportation but could have received a prison term of up to 18 months for entering the narrow strip of land along the U.S.-Mexico border that President Trump recently transferred to the military. Nearly a dozen ICE agents have been left stranded alongside a group of eight deportees in a converted shipping container at a U.S. military base in Djibouti. That's according to an extraordinary document filed in federal court Thursday by an ICE official who writes, agents and their prisoners face risks from disease, extreme heat, poor air quality, and warnings of potential rocket attacks on the base of Yemen's Houthi fighters. The deportees arrived in Djibouti aboard a U.S. deportation flight after a federal judge ruled they could not be transferred to South Sudan, a nation on the brink of civil war to which they are not citizens. Rather than return the deportees to the U.S. to reopen their cases, they were rerouted to Djibouti. In Massachusetts, a federal judge Thursday ordered the release of the Milford High School honors student Marcelo Gomez da Silva. Last week, immigration agents arrested the 18-year-old on his way to volleyball practice. Gomez was able to reunite with his family and friends in an emotional scene after his release on $2,000 bond. He told reporters he was confined to a windowless room, holding dozens of men with no access to the outdoors, no privacy, and no shower for the entire 6 days he was jailed.
Said, she was like, do you know why you're arrested? And I said, no, I don't. She said, because you overstayed your visa. You came here in 2013, and in 2015 you overstayed. And I told her, I was like, ma'am, I was 7 years old. Like, I don't know nothing about that stuff. Like, I don't understand how it works.
After Marcelo was detained on Saturday, on Sunday there was graduation. He was supposed to be in the band in which he plays. After graduation, the students marched in their gowns to town hall to protest his detention. For the first time, the Trump administration's returned a wrongly deported immigrant. A Guatemalan man identified in court filings as OCG was returned to the U.S. on Wednesday following a federal judge's order to take all immediate steps to reverse his deportation to Guatemala, where he was previously held for ransom and raped. A new lawsuit alleges Colorado Governor Jared Polis collaborated with the Trump administration after it issued a secret subpoena to force Colorado officials to turn over personal information on residents sponsoring unaccompanied migrant children. According to the lawsuit, Governor Polis directed his staff to comply with the order, even though he had signed a law explicitly prohibiting such cooperation. In more news from Colorado, a federal judge Wednesday ordered the Trump administration to immediately halt deportation proceedings against the family of the Egyptian man charged in Sunday's firebombing attack in Boulder, which injured 12 people at a protest in support of Israeli hostages. Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem personally announced the deportation proceedings in a video she shared on social media earlier this week.
We're also investigating to what extent his family knew about this horrific attack, if they had any knowledge of it, or if they provided support to it.
Attorneys for the wife of Mohammed Sabri Soleiman and their five children wrote in a successful lawsuit challenging their deportation, quote, it's patently unlawful to punish individuals for the crimes of their relatives, unquote. Dozens of attorneys, law school professors, and retired Florida Supreme Court justices have filed an ethics complaint against U.S. Attorney General Pam Bondi with the Florida Bar Association, accusing her of serious professional misconduct. The complaint says Bondi threatened Justice Department lawyers with discipline or termination if they failed to, quote, zealously pursue the president's political objectives, unquote. Attorney General Bondi has played a central role in the firings and resignations of numerous government lawyers during her 4 months leading the Justice Department. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. We begin today's show with the escalating feud between President Trump and Elon Musk, the world's richest man, who up until just recently was a top presidential advisor and Trump's top political benefactor. The fight could have broad implications for Trump's presidency, the Republican Party, and many government programs, including NASA, that rely on technology from Musk's various companies. The feud became public Tuesday when Musk called Trump's so-called big, beautiful budget bill a disgusting abomination because it'll increase the federal deficit by $2.5 trillion. The tension then escalated considerably on Thursday. During a meeting with German Chancellor Friedrich Merz, a reporter asked Trump about Musk's comment. This is part of his response.
But I'm very disappointed because Elon knew the inner workings of this bill better than almost anybody sitting here, better than you people. He knew everything about it. He had no problem with it. All of a sudden, he had a problem, and
he only developed the problem when he found out that we're going to have to cut the EV mandate, because that's billions and billions of dollars, and it really is unfair. He knew it better than almost anybody, and he never had a problem until right after he left. And if you saw the statements he made about me, which I'm sure you can get very easily, it's very fresh on tape. He said the most beautiful things about me. And he hasn't said bad about me personally, but I'm sure that'll be next. But I'm very disappointed in Elon. I've helped Elon a lot.
The feud then spilled into social media with the two billionaires launching personal attacks on their own social media platforms, Musk on X and Trump on Truth Social. At 2:37 p.m. Thursday, Trump wrote, "Elon was wearing thin. I asked him to leave. I took away his EV mandate that forced everyone to buy electric cars that nobody else wanted, that he knew for months I was going to do, and he just went crazy," unquote. At 3:10 p.m., Musk wrote, quote, "Time to drop the really big bomb. Real Donald Trump is in the Epstein files. That's the real reason they have not been made public. Have a nice day, DJT." Then Trump wrote, "The easiest way to save money in our budget, billions and billions of dollars, is to terminate Elon's governmental subsidies and contracts. I was always surprised Biden didn't do it," Trump said. Musk responded by threatening to decommission the Dragon spacecraft used by NASA. Musk also appeared to back the impeachment of Trump and took credit for Trump winning the presidency. Trump ally Steve Bannon went further, calling for Musk to be investigated and deported. He also called for Trump to seize Musk's company, SpaceX. To talk more about the fracturing of the Trump-Musk relationship and what this could mean for the Republican Party, we're joined by Quinn Slobodian, professor of international history at Boston University, working on a book about Elon Musk titled Muskism. He is author of Hayek's Bastards, Race, Gold, IQ, and the Capitalism of the Far Right, as well as Crack-Up Capitalism, Market Radicals, and the Dream of a World Without Democracy. Professor Slobodian, welcome back to Democracy Now! Were you shocked by what you saw happen yesterday? I mean, who knows? They could be holding a joint news conference soon and announce they're back in love.
Yeah, I mean, they are people who always have their eye on the bottom line, but they also are obviously titanically sized egos. And I think that more than anything, this is just a sign of how dangerous it is to put, you know, billions of dollars, even the lives of astronauts, the whole future of the American economy and the political scene in the hands of two sole human beings.
When you said threaten the lives of astronauts, explain.
Well, the Dragon unit that you mentioned is the only way for the astronauts in the International Space Station to get to and from where they are now. So were he to decommission it, it might literally mean that they would be stranded out there, kind of gravity style. So this is just one of the examples of many of the offloading of core government functions onto private service providers that Elon Musk has been so masterful at playing, that we feel more and more exposed to from the use of Starlink satellites in the field of battle in the Ukraine, to the use of the same internet connection as leverage in his battle with the Brazilian government. I feel like over time we'll only realize more and more how much we are at the mercy of someone who is acting with total impetuousness and sometimes not even with his own self-interest in mind.
The ground that Elon Musk taking on the budget, calling it an abomination, when Trump said he knows that the budget bill better than almost anyone else inside and out, Musk's response was, "That is false. I never saw it. It was passed in the middle of the night." Can you talk about the significance? I mean, this is the guy in charge of Doge. How many thousands of jobs have been lost? And yet at the same time now, he's viciously attacking the budget that was so narrowly passed, and it could threaten its ultimate passage.
I mean, I think it's worth sort of returning to the question of why Musk got involved at all with Trump, right? What he was doing with this Doge project. And I think it's possible to kind of split it up into three categories. I think, first of all, he was doing a kind of a bear hug strategy. So I think especially on the trade war and his many, many interests in China, you know, he has a gigafactory there that has capacity to make a million Teslas a year. He wanted to get out in front of any possible excessive economic nationalism that might be rolled out. And then I think he was kind of making a Hail Mary move that, you know, he hadn't really clicked with the Biden administration, and this could be a chance to maybe use a window of opportunity to boost his own aspirations, especially in artificial intelligence, where he was being outpaced by people like Sam Altman and OpenAI. And then third, I think you could see it as a kind of moonshot strategy, where I think he was trying to really even more plug in his own services, especially SpaceX, to, in fact, not only get to the moon, but divert the whole project towards Mars. So there was a lot of reasons why Musk would want to be involved. But from Trump's point of view, I mean, he's never really been a fiscal hawk, right? He's always actually run against austerity in certain ways and run against this mainstream obsession with the debt ceiling and the deficit that has so defined GOP politics for the last couple decades. So it was always kind of an odd fit. And it's not surprising in that sense that Musk now feels that this budget is, you know, not hard austerity enough for his liking. It's telling, for example, that he's posted multiple Milton Friedman memes over the last couple of days, sort of implying that this problem of runaway debt, inflation should be top of mind at all times for the government. But Trump has always profited by playing fast and loose with that kind of ideology. And the question is, why now has this led to a snapping point for Musk? And I think there's a...
Keep going.
If I could just say, I think there's a couple of things there. I think Trump invokes the EV mandate, and that is a serious issue, right? What that is, it needs to be broken down, is the capacity of California to enforce a move towards electric cars over time, a part of which is a regulatory credit system that allows normal ICE, internal combustion engine vehicles, to buy credits from electric vehicle manufacturers. And this is now 40% of Tesla's net income in the last year. It went up $1 billion in the last year alone. And if that gets killed, it really does kind of kill Tesla's margin. And I think that Musk is starting to feel the heat from Chinese producers like BYD, battery producers like CATL. And I think he sees here maybe the possible demise of the Tesla brand, as he is hated more and more from both sides of the spectrum. So there's reasons, as he returns to his businesses, to start to sweat about what he's actually signed up for.
How about what this highlights around a rift within the MAGA movement and where J.D. Vance fits into this, the vice president?
Well, it's always interesting to ask what exactly was going on with Doge, right? I mean, if you want to get into the real kind of dangerous liaisons, sort of courtesanship, I think that was happening inside of the White House. It seems that, based on reporting, Stephen Miller was kind of stage managing, along with his wife, a lot of what was happening with Doge. And if you look at what actually came out of Doge, and this is a good time now for us to sort of do an autopsy or postmortem on it as it winds down, really. He said he was going to do $2 trillion in cuts out of a $6 trillion budget. Very unlikely. Went back to $1 trillion. Scaled it back to $150 billion. What did they end up taking out? I mean, it's basically culture war stuff, right? I mean, it's ways to trigger the progressives and the libs, get rid of U.S. aid, attack NEH funding, arts funding, science funding, education, energy. These ended up being big wins, not really for Musk's own bottom-line cost-cutting mentality, but very much for the culture war being waged by people like Miller and J.D. Vance and Russell Vought at the Office of Management of Budget. So there is a way of looking at this as having been a success from their point of view. They were able to use the credibility of Musk as a kind of supposed, brilliant Edison-like inventor and wonderful, efficiency-creating cost cutter to actually get to some of their political goals. But they never could bring that big number down. Why? Because entitlement spending still dominates the state spending in the GDP. And when you come close to that, you come close to the kind of beating heart of the social contract. And we saw the town hall meetings. We saw the anger when things started to encroach on the questions of Social Security and Medicaid. And for me, that was a very telling moment. And it was one that I think took Musk by surprise, too. He's not used to the idea of needing to engage with a kind of consent and legitimacy mechanism where people feel like they paid into something and should now get something back. He's used to interacting with a Twitter fan base, a set of really bought-in Tesla investors for whom, you know, he always walks on water and he's a god reincarnate. And when he just was confronted with the anger of average people who want to make sure that they can pay for their next meal, he didn't know what to do. So I think that there's a kind of a, there's a way to see this as a victory for the national conservatives. They got to do some of their easy wins against the progressives and the libs, and now they're able to keep the door open for more protectionism and expansion of spending, as we see in the so-called Big Beautiful Bill.
Finally, do you think Musk has access to all of the private information that his Doge army downloaded from all the agencies? Is that possible?
I am not a software programmer, or I do not know how databases work that well, but it seems at least likely that part of what they were doing there when they were converting things done in old programming languages and updating them was also, you know, harvesting a lot of that data for use for we don't know what, feeding the machine of Grok or XAI is the most likely answer.
And finally, let me ask you, Steve Bannon, who's on the anti-Musk side of the MAGA rift, has been calling for Trump to nationalize Musk's businesses and for him to be deported, right? I mean, Elon Musk comes from South Africa.
Yeah, I mean, this actually isn't the harshest thing that Bannon has ever said. He referred to Silicon Valley as an apartheid state a few months ago. The idea of nationalizing SpaceX is an interesting one. It would certainly run against the core privatization ethos that Trump and the former GOP has been following for decades and decades. So far, I would chalk that up to just saber-rattling rhetoric for his podcast more than an actual policy proposal.
Quinn Slobodian, I want to thank you for being with us, professor of international history at Boston University, among other books, Crack Up Capitalism, Market Radicals, and the Dream of a World Without Democracy, working on his new book called Muskism. When we come back, we look at the deadly impact of the House budget bill. Back in 20 seconds.
¿Por qué me temes? Si soy fruto de algo que no tiene nombre, el error que no comete nunca el hombre. ¿Por qué me temes? ¿Por qué me temes? Si estoy hecha para estar arrepentida y mi historia se ha quedado ya sin vida, ¿por qué me temes?
Temes by Ilay, performing in our Democracy Now! Studio. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. The Congressional Budget Office projects 16 million people could lose health care coverage under the cuts to Medicaid and the Affordable Care Act and Trump's so-called Big Beautiful Bill, now before the Senate passed by the House, which also includes massive tax handouts for billionaires. This comes as public health experts warn the proposed cuts could lead to more than 50,000 preventable deaths each year in the U.S. For more, we're joined by one of those experts, Allison Galvani. She is director of the Center for Infectious Disease Modeling and Analysis at Yale School of Public Health, where she also holds an endowed chair in epidemiology. She's part of a group of public health experts at Yale and the University of Pennsylvania who sent a letter this week to Senate Finance Committee ranking members Ron Wyden and Bernie Sanders, warning about the impact of these provisions. Welcome back to Democracy Now! It's great to have you with us, Professor. If you can start off by talking about exactly what you found. We are talking about real lives, not concepts, not policy fights, when it comes to this budget bill that the Senate is now weighing.
Absolutely, yeah. Thank you for having me again. So the bill proposes deep cuts to Medicaid, imposes onerous paperwork, and fails to safeguard health care tax credits. As you mentioned, the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office estimates that these rollbacks would cause 16 million Americans to lose their insurance. Exacerbating the crisis, nursing homes will also become less safe by rescinding staffing members. nurses will lose their jobs and patients will suffer. Seniors will also be impacted by the elimination of current prescription subsidies. So altogether, we projected that these retractions would precipitate more than 51,000 unnecessary deaths annually.
So if you can talk more about what exactly, we have two different issues. One is the budget,